It's great to be here for one main reason. About 18 months ago, when we started to think about how we would design and implement a process for setting up health and wellbeing boards, this is exactly the sort of event and report that we hoped would emerge to help us with the process of articulating how a health and wellbeing board would work. This is obviously in the context where back in May 2010 we became a government which sought few opportunities to prescribe how things work in this agenda at every available opportunity. So in terms of the pre-legislative process, we started, I can't pretend that this hasn't been one of the easier starting points in the jobs that I've had, because when we started to talk to councillors, council officers and parts of the NHS, starting to talk about health and wellbeing boards when we had removed what some might describe as the rigidity of LAAs and LSPs, was a very good starting point. People were really keen to start to engage in this in a broader and more open field. So that really drove us, when we started to think about the legislation, to start from a point of prescribing as little as possible in the legislation. So, for example, in the core membership that we prescribed, we were surprised in the feedback to the consultation that there was as much support for even putting that bare membership onto the face of the bill. And that helped us through many conversations with different parts of the public sector who were concerned that the police, housing, education didn't have those statutory seats on the Health and Wellbeing Board. And I think the point we've got to there is, I think what we're saying is, the role of the Health and Wellbeing Board and the members on it isn't to justify who has a seat and who doesn't, it's to justify how the Health and Wellbeing Board has that important role and has that line of sight to all of the other agencies and all of the other pots of money that can help contribute to health and wellbeing in the community. So I think one of the main points that we've tried to carry through is, many people will describe the complexity of the new health and care system. And we have never felt that attempting to legislate a way of working or a set of rules will be an effective mitigation to that. We've been trying to find that balance between the rules, between how people coordinate, and specifically around things like the Joint Strategic Needs Assessment and Joint Health and Wellbeing Strategy. In that area, we are going to hopefully publish some guidance, and we think that's sort of the binding bit of the mechanism that brings those partners together. So it's been a good position, point of discussion. We have done lots of co-production, and in the department we feel that we've learned a lot from that process. Some of the other things that I would just mention, in terms of there's lots of discussion about the relative power of the partners. One of the things that we were worried about from the start was how the danger of giving vetoes to one member of the Health and Wellbeing Board when what we're talking about is trying to establish an effective partnership. We think in the legislation, in the guidance that we've used and that other partners have published, that we've got the right balance. What that does leave is quite a lot of space for people to be concerned about the ultimate levers that can be pulled if there is disagreement or a lack of consent. But one of the things that I hope that will mitigate that is that the sheer appetite of many bits of the local public sector to engage not just in public health but in the broader agenda. So others will tell me if they think I'm wrong, but in the education sector, I think I and public health colleagues see a real appetite to want to engage in health and wellbeing board discussion, and there's a challenge there for health and wellbeing boards to respond to, particularly for CCDs and councillors, to keep that agenda together. So I have confidence that we can do that. I'm sure we'll talk lots about the importance of networks in the next hour or so. They are critically important. I think that's a critically important part of getting the membership of health and wellbeing boards right and getting its role in the local community. But the other key thing that we've been focusing on, particularly working with the LGA, is on the importance of collaborative leadership. So we're working with the LGA on developing a leadership offer to councillors, GPs, and the other key directors to start to really engage in what collaborative leadership means. So going forwards, I think we've done lots of work with partners about how you get a health and wellbeing board to work. The collaborative leadership model is again in that space about getting those leaders together. And the next stage, I think, is about how the health and wellbeing board works in a wider system. But my final comment is just to thank New Government Network for this contribution, because, as I said at the start, it's fueling the debate.